The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here are David Littlejohn and Katie Shook with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right. It is that time again. I feel like we were just here a week ago.
That's such a bad joke.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's the best Tuesday you've had all day. I am your host, David Littlejohn, and you are tuning in to The True Wealth Show, joining me in studio.
Wow, that's a long, drawn-out introduction. Katie Shook.
And we are delighted to be here talking shop about finances. And a reminder, as we go into the holiday season where we have commercialized what started as a non-commercial holiday because America, right? But
is it our fault? Is it really? Because I'm pretty sure the gift giving started in some other countries.
Well, whatever the case, here we are. I want to remind folks that the true wealth moments are the ones that matter. So it is not about the stuff and it's not about the money. Money's not how we keep score, or at least it shouldn't be. It is a tool. It enables us to do things because the true wealth are the memories and the relationships that we build. How's that for a schmooze?
That's a good one. And I would say as we go into Christmas Eve and Christmas Day that while you may not be able to gather as usual with some family members, hug the ones you have because some people are not getting to hug as many this year.
True story.
So and for those True Wealth moments, love on the ones you can.
I've got a fun True Wealth piece of trivia. All right. So the ongoing debate, is it Happy Holidays or Merry Christmas?
Are you asking me personally?
Or is it Xmas?
Oh, it's not
it.
Yeah.
No, it turns out.
There's a debate on that?
There's a lot of people that feel like if they hear Happy Holidays from somebody, that that's somehow an affront. And I have been since educated to a certain degree that they all, it's sort of like in this case, now I'm really careful the way I say this, okay? I'm really careful because in evangelical circles, this can be misconstrued. So don't misconstrue what I'm about to say. It's not that all religions point to the same place. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying both Christmas, Xmas, and Happy Holidays all point the same direction because Happy Holidays was Holy Days. Xmas is the X as in Chi, the Greek letter which was representative of Christ, and Christmas being Christ Mass. So there you go. And so, yeah, none of them are necessarily provocative.
Or unassociated.
And yet we have made it such. Now, Happy Holidays is a, at the risk of gagging some and then pleasing others, which I don't care today, right? Happy Holidays is a relatively inclusive deal because there are lots of seasonal holidays in December.
Right.
Right? And so I'm not taking a shot at any, and I'm just not afraid to say where I stand personally, right? So as a Christian, I'm okay being out of the closet and saying, that's who I am.
So right? Then
but it's not to punch anybody in the face for not being like me.
I guess my question then would be if someone were of a different faith, like if, you know, they were Jewish and you said instead of Happy Hanukkah, would Happy Holidays work for them or would they be offended? And I mean, I don't know. And I'm not speaking on behalf of that religion.
And
so that's why I'm asking.
Is this not the cultural question of the day?
How to offend people?
Well, you know, if offense is in the eye of the beholder, then what it says is, no, regardless of the intention of my message, if somebody else receives it and takes offense, they get to be the one to call whether or not it's offensive. And that's a pickle, really, because like, what if I was really well intended and somebody else was just having a grouchy day and so they just went off? And that's kind of the challenge spot that we're in these days, right?
Right. And there are, like you said.
I mean, some people are intentionally trying to be offensive, but it was said to me really well once, you know, offense is taken, not given in this day and age.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because you could attempt to offend somebody. And I tell people it's really hard to offend me. You could be a real jerk. And I would just look at it and say, well you're a jerk. And I'll move on. Right. You know, I don't have to associate with you. That's that. But when somebody says I'm a jerk and I'm like, well, was I? Or is that just you being really overly sensitive or reading more into the situation than maybe existed? And, you know, we have a whole cultural around how we'll rationalize whether or not there's victimhood and so forth. And I just, I don't even know how to make heads or tails of it anymore.
So to me, this is like the texting argument. You can read any tone of voice you want into a text message.
Exactly.
Right? And so it's like, nope, they're just characters on a thing. And depending on how well you know the person and depending on what, like you said, what's going on in your life at that moment, you may read it and go, that was snarky. Or you may read it and go, yeah, okay, whatever. And reply. And your reply is also different.
Even more than 90% of communication is nonverbal.
Right.
Which makes is, radio interesting.
It does. It does. Yeah. So you get to imagine how wonderfully spiritedly dressed we are today.
Tone and inflection matters. My shoes are really loud today.
Are they?
Oh, yeah.
What color are your shoes again? I wasn't even looking.
Like bright orange.
Oh, my gosh. They are really loud.
Yes.
Mine are not loud. Mine are coach. Mine are quietly snarking in the corner, I guess.
Yeah, nothing quiet about it. But I still have a face for radio, and that's what we're sticking with.
Oh, not true.
So, gang, let's talk about stuff that matters to you as a listener. Now that we've established that the season is still, you know, not without, I don't know, what we do in this day and age. Instead, that's just the we should all just get along more. And then we should enjoy the holiday season. And let's talk about
and my
the
birthday
markets.
Season.
That's
it's,
true. Birthday
it's Katie's
week.
Birthday week. Well, I'm now
Katie's
stretching it into
week
2 weeks.
Because what you do is it's like, well, it starts 6 days before my birthday and it goes until 6 days after. So it's really a 13-day birthday window.
It starts. Yeah. Okay. I'll give it to you. Yeah. Because it kind of ends Christmas Eve. Like you can't really, you know, Christ's birth kind of trumps mine. So
yeah.
At some point you go, yeah, and I'm done here. Santa Claus wins. But yeah.
It's a lot of savings on wrapping paper, though.
No. See, my mom almost got it this year. So my one really weird rule is no poinsettias on my birthday cake. And my birthday cake did not have poinsettias, but it had red and white roses. So and I was like, you're flirting with the red frosting a little too close now.
A poinsettia or a poinsettia?
Are you really going to get in this debate with me right now on this?
I figure it's harmless. It's poinsettia the way you said it. That's how I learned it, too. And then somebody else was like, it's poinsettia. And doggone it.
There's an I.
Google, it's like actually spelled poinsettia.
Yeah, but that's like, is it Willamette? Because we pronounce it Willamette. But if you actually pronounce it with
Worcestershire sauce?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go try that one on.
Nobody ever says Worcestershire sauce.
Worcestershire?
It's Worcestershire sauce. So, yeah. And you're right. And it's Louisville. It's not Louisville. It's Louisville. So,
whatever.
Come on. You know, if you're going to get picky on it, I guess it depends on the vernacular of the area you're in.
Okay.
How about that answer?
Okay. I'm going to roll with it.
Do you say washcloth or do you say washcloth?
Well, there's no R in wash.
True, but people still say washcloth.
Well, people can be wrong.
Half the world is not wrong, David. Maybe there is an R somewhere.
But the other half is. Half the world's below average, too. Ooh. Okay.
My favorite expression is, I may not always be right, but I'm never wrong.
I just tell people I've been expert in my own opinion, and that's mostly what I deal in.
Oh, all right. So what do people care about today?
All right. Did you know? Did you hear what I heard?
Probably.
Because I work 10 feet away from you. House and Senate, they officially passed some stimulus, and everybody went, womp, womp.
I don't know if everybody went wah-wah. Some people went, yay, we have some Christmas shopping to
markets do. Markets didn't care that much. NASDAQ went up a little bit. Dow finished down. S&P finished down. I have a theory on that one.
Okay.
Right?
What's your theory on that one?
My theory on that one, that this is asset rotation. I think there's more optimism about the idea that the vaccine is being distributed for COVID and that the economy will reopen. Then there is pessimism that there are changes in viral strain like they were projecting or at least saying is occurring in Britain right now.
Okay.
So more aggressive strain that's mutated, and whether or not that vaccine will be effective is to be determined.
Okay.
But if we're going to be reopening the economy, then a lot of the stocks that were the stay closed trade are likely to be repositioned into the reopen trade. And that, to a certain extent, would explain why some of the mega cap stocks are declining where the small and mid cap stocks are rising. Not exclusively, but often.
So can you explain to our listeners who may not understand the difference between small, mid-cap, and large-cap stocks? What does that mean?
It's the size of the hat.
Are you joking or are you being serious?
That is totally a joke.
That was not funny.
Okay.
Nobody
really?
No,
really? Everybody out there is like, come on.
Can I
it was
have a, like the buzzer?
It was a cap
the
joke,
I need
you know,
the
like market cap. Button. It's like a thinking cap.
Oh.
Okay.
This is not a sorting cap. This is not.
See, and now she gets it all
in Harry Potter. We are not in Harry Potter.
It is a sorting cap, but in this case, it's capitalization. And you're sorting the market based on company size. And we've talked on the program many times about capitalization rate. It also shows up, incidentally, in real estate.
Oh, interesting. So okay. What would be the example of like a large cap company?
So large cap companies are companies typically over 10 billion in size, I would say.
So Amazon?
Oh, sure.
Nike.
Amazon's like a $1 trillion company.
Right.
Nike's a multi-billion dollar. I mean, the most of the S&P 500 are billion plus
large
companies.
They're
large caps.
What would be like a smaller mid-size?
Well, small is below probably. I'm going to kind of wing it here. Let's say 3 billion, and 3 to 10 billion is mid-cap. And then above 10 billion, you start to drift into large cap. And, you know, those definitions have changed over the course of my career. So I there's probably some formal specific spot on definition. It's probably
well, and I wasn't necessarily looking for definition as much as like, give me an example of some companies we know that fit these categories so we can kind of
well, local companies
understand.
Like maybe a Lithia or something like that. So Lithia Motors here in town, that's a publicly traded company. You can buy Lithia stock. And I would guess that that's a small cap company. It's probably in the billions. I mean, here, I'll look it up because I can do that on the air. Lithia Motors, it's ticker symbol LAD.
And also not investment advice, by the
way. Right, this is not. Market cap, $7.4 billion. Okay, there you go.
So they're small cap.
Well, it kind of depends. They're somewhere in the between small and mid cap, depending on. But if my definition is off, then so now I want to go figure out the formal definition of where the cap threshold is.
I wasn't trying to get into the weeds. I was just trying to give people an idea when you're thinking about, you know, what does that mean to me? Like when you start throwing out the word like billions, I mean, that sounds kind of like monopoly money after a while.
Here's the crazy thing. It's not as big as it used to be.
Right.
Right. And that's just if you think about a
but
billion
is that due
dollars.
To inflation?
Yeah. Well, $1 billion 20 years ago. 20 years ago was the year 2000. And there was a season when that was a big deal. Right. Oh, my gosh. We're going to transition into the new millennium. Right. But that's been two decades ago. So when we crossed to 2000 and you go back in the day to those market values, the Dow back in 2000, so today it's over 30,000. And if I look at what it was back in, let's see, right about, I'm kind of hustling through, we get to January 2000, it was about 10.7.
Wow, so it's like tripled.
Well, doubled, right? It went from 10 to 20 to 20 to 30. So it doubled from the original twice. So
right.
That would be a 200% higher than it was back then, but it's the number is, you know, 3 times 10 to get there. So if that's the case, then what, I mean, it would stand to reason that the market capitalization rate would double too. So if it was 3 billion back then, it should be closer to 10 billion to get to a mid cap now because everything is shifting. Right. Again, it stands to reason. I mean, think about what houses cost 20 years ago and what they cost today.
Oh, I remember my mom telling me in the 80s that a house cost like $20,000.
Yeah.
Like well, 18, and that was expensive,
and,
like 18
and,
to 20,000.
In 2000, I remember shopping for places, and you know, you could find places for under 100. Today, if a house is under $100,000.
Oh, it's a shack that's
well, you're like
apart.
Wondering if it's been condemned for being a meth kitchen or something.
Right. Here in Oregon. Now, cost across the country is obviously all different. Right?
Yeah, but I not mean, radically so. I mean, there's a certain amount of raw material cost that goes in outside of labor. And, you know, the cost of the materials that goes into the house are still higher.
True.
I mean, everything's inflated higher. And and that's on purpose, right? It's probably appropriate to discuss why it's going higher.
That'd be a fun thing to do after the break.
It's on purpose. Yeah, we better, huh? You know, we're long on the first segment because we just had so darn much fun with you guys. So we'll take a break. We'll come back. We could talk a little bit about inflation, but I want to talk about the stimulus package. You guys, let's unpack what's in there and whether or not you care. But we got to take a break. So stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. And if you're on the podcast, you're like, we weren't even gone. But if you're not on the podcast, get on the podcast, right? Check them out.
And if you're listening to the podcast every once in a while, and put it on your calendar, listen to us live. It's a lot of fun.
Also, we will be, if you're not, I'm doing a promo, right? Self-promo time. Or firm promo, really not me.
YouTube.
Go to our YouTube channel. So go up, look up Little John Financial, and we've got our YouTube channel, and we are going to be posting. We just did a town hall where we were doing our 2021 projections, and we were answering questions about what do we think is coming down the pike, and you know what are we at Little John Financial and our investment committee? What are the key things that we're looking at as we're positioning for 2021?
I'm going to throw it out there a little bit further than that. I'd probably say the number one question that was asked was, how do you think the stock markets are going to fluctuate, or how are they going to be affected by a new administration?
Right.
By the Biden administration.
Right.
And David and Wes and Justin answer that.
Yes.
On that. So I'm just saying that, like,
this
if
is
you,
like a, yeah. Was that like a hint, like answer for our listeners, or like go check out the
No, it was like go check out the podcast. Like, if you asked yourself, how are the stock markets going to change with the new Biden administration? There's a wonderful town hall thing that they, and I know you use the word town hall, basically an online Zoom. All of you should be familiar with that by now.
It was just a webinar kind of
format.
It was
a webinar, but they answer that question and they kind of unpack those things. So if those
are
the things.
And you can see it's on Facebook right now. If you go to our Facebook page, you'll find it in the feed there. But it'll be in the YouTube channel, and we're going to clean it up a little bit because you got sort of the live unedited version on Facebook that was saved there. The YouTube version will clean up. You know, there's some, you know, launch time and so forth.
A little more cliff notes.
It'll just be a little more abbreviated so that you can get through it quicker. It was not short, but it wasn't crazy long.
No, but it answered a lot of really good questions.
Yeah, and we did come head on at several things. I mean, we're still, you got to watch how the world's going to reopen, right? That's part of the investor dynamic. We got to watch the elections in Georgia. We've got to watch a number of things from just a legislative perspective. And you got to watch the Federal Reserve a lot.
I feel like it's a long to-do list with a lot of boxes to check.
Yeah, yeah. So, and other ones, like we addressed, people are starting to ask now, is Bitcoin part of a portfolio? We talked about that. I didn't really come here to reproduce what we talked about.
No, that wasn't
yesterday.
My point.
So like, if you're curious, what do we think about the Biden administration? What do we think about Bitcoin? What do we think about legislation? What do we think about the Fed? All of those sort of come up in that 2021 outlook a little bit of 2020 review.
You brought up, though, before the break that we were going to talk about the stimulus check that
Congress
just announced.
They did. And so and the markets largely went, okay. If you're wondering why haven't the markets reacted more positively to stimulus?
Well, they know how to price it now because they saw it once. And it was a bigger stimulus than this one is.
And I don't know that that's true. I don't think that's an accurate statement.
Okay.
No,
that's okay.
I promise I'm not trying to throw you under the bus.
No, I mean, that would be my rationale for it. So please explain to me how you see it.
Well, the markets were, think about the markets as they're pricing in the future today.
Okay.
So the markets had already assumed
there was going to be a
stimulus. And so it was already priced in by the time this occurred, is what I believe is a more rational explanation or a more complete explanation. Because yours is not irrational. I just think this better explains it. I'm really trying not to
poor David. He feels like he's digging at me today, and it's not. I'm just saying,
I'm not picking, I promise.
It's a different opinion. I mean, how many times in the past have we had a stimulus like that? I mean, those are the answers I don't know. I haven't seen one in my lifetime.
Never.
Okay, so to me, if, we had one once and it was bigger per person than what they're offering now.
The first stimulus package was almost $4 trillion. This one's $900 billion.
Right, so it's way bigger. No, $4 trillion.
It's about a quarter of the size,
right,
or a little smaller than that. So it's way smaller.
Right. But my point being is if we saw how the markets reacted to the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then it goes, OK, well, if we're getting more stimulus, but it's a quarter less, then there's not as much woohoo in the whole thing. Was kind of my thinking. But I like the way you said it, too, that it has already priced it in. Right. It's already said,
it was expected. Everybody was like, well, how much longer will this political gamesmanship go on? And it was very clear, right? It was very clear that the Democrat side of the aisle had no interest in stimulus prior to the election, right? And here's why it's relatively obvious. Because what was just passed is near identical to what the Republicans had proposed prior to the election.
Oh, interesting.
And so now that it passes and everybody comes along and says, okay, well, that's how politics work, right? You position if you're bothered by this, listening to this going, I can't believe blankety blank they did that. This happens all the time. That's
right.
What politics is. It's about, and shame on most voters for not paying attention if this is catching you by surprise. Because all it says is for optics, right? For appearance purposes, nobody wanted anything that would make their team look weaker and make the other team look stronger.
Right.
So if you don't want the existing president reelected, make their team look weaker and try to sway the vote. That's politics, literally. So, I mean, I'm not saying anything remarkable or partisan here. This shouldn't be like I can't believe he said that.
And by the way, this isn't a personal dig against
Trump. Like me saying,
it's not a Biden-Trump debate. It's just, this is the
By
the
way,
laws
grass
of the
is
game.
Green and the sky is blue and
right.
Rain is rain. You know, I mean, like, it's those really simple, obvious statements. There's nothing prophetic or remarkable about these commentary.
Right.
It just is. So, anyway, the markets saw this coming. And when it finally happened, okay, it happened. And a lot of folks view this as ho-hum because it really is significantly watered down and has more strings attached. I'm not even making a judgment call if this is good, bad, or otherwise. Okay? Because what's in it? First of all, you remember the first round? There was a check that everybody was written if you qualified, right? So if
right.
you were under a certain income threshold, you got a stimulus check. And
$1,200
right?
per person.
$1,200 a person. And this round, it is?
$600.
Yeah, it's half. Okay. There was an additional...
It was less. It was like $1,200 per adult, and I thought it was less per kid. Wasn't it like $500 per kid or something?
I don't remember the details off the top of my head.
No, I'm trying to remember. I think it was something like that. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So this time around, it's $600 per dependent in your household. So under 18 or under. If your kid's over that, they don't get to qualify under yours. However, they may qualify independently and get it for themselves.
Right.
Okay.
But they're going based on tax returns.
It's
so, like,
based
if you're
on
dependent,
tax, based
has never
on
filed
your
the tax return.
2019 tax return.
Right.
So if you're 20, if you qualified in 2019, but you don't in 2020, you're lucky. You get to keep it.
Well, and they said the opposite too. If you didn't qualify in 2019, but you do qualify this year,
right.
then you can
then you
like,
can send your tax returns after you file them, and they should retroactively credit you for it.
Right.
Okay. So, okay, that's better than nothing. It's not as good as the first one, depending on your perspective, right? Good or bad. Like, if you thought the first round of stimulus was a terrible idea, then this is less bad to you. If you thought that it was a great idea, then this is less good to you.
I'm right? still worried about the gotcha, because what I read in the fine print on the stimulus the first time was this was a pre-tax refund that they were giving you. Now, I don't know if that actually...
I think that went away and was clarified. So, no, this is not a pre-tax refund of what is...
The $1,200 wasn't, or the
correct.
$600? Okay.
I don't think either of them are.
Okay.
Now, I will be real clear. This is not tax advice, nor is it gospel. But my understanding is that it was just, here's money, you get it.
Okay.
And it's also, as best I can tell, it's tax-free. They're not going to count it as income that will be taxable.
Okay.
So, if you qualified for it, you just got it.
Okay.
Okay. They did clarify some things around the payroll protection plan or program. The PPP loans. Those were forgivable loans. And for most small businesses, if you had, if you borrowed under $2 million, you're probably home free. There was a question about whether or not business expenses would still be deductible. It sounds like they will be. Although, again, these are things where you should check with your CPA. So these are business owner kinds of issues. Now, unemployment benefits. They extended them, it looks like, another 11 weeks. Okay, and $300 a week of additional unemployment benefit to be extended for 11 more weeks. That will help, but it's not as much as the previous, which I think was $600
yeah.
a week. So it's half. So everything's been reduced this round. The PPP loans, they've added more. I'll discuss that momentarily.
Okay.
There's more PPP loans available, but they're going to be harder to qualify for, right? There's going
to
have more
like
financial conditions to it.
Right.
So I think what they're really trying to do is aid the hospitality and restaurant and entertainment industries because they were really hard hit.
Right.
You know, movie theaters are going bankrupt, that kind of thing. So there's looks like there's going to be a lot of stimulus available for those organizations to try to keep them propped up. So is it good, bad, or otherwise? Well,
I guess it depends on where you're sitting.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think it's a matter of perspective.
I mean, if you're having a hard time keeping food in your tummy and in your cupboards and a shelter over your head, you'd say it's good.
Yeah. And but here's the caveat.
Okay.
Bitcoin.
What? We're talking about stimulus. Why is it Bitcoin?
Well, let's think about this for a minute, right? First, you have stimulus.
Okay.
And then you have Bitcoin going over 20,000.
Yeah, it's bananas right now.
And then you have me leave you with a cliffhanger and say, we'll take a break.
What?
Yeah.
David.
So if we take the break, everybody's going to wonder, how are you connecting the stimulus package to Bitcoin? And here's the crazy thing. I think it's obvious. I'll explain when we come back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
You're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. So, the usual reminders, podcast if you're wondering why Bitcoin has anything to do with stimulus.
Yeah, I wouldn't know that.
Okay.
I'm waiting for that moment. Just wait. It's coming.
It's coming. Here's the deal. Who pays for the stimulus?
The government. Us?
Does the government produce anything?
They print money for it,
kind of.
I
mean, the government does roles and has a role in the economy, but the private sector, by and large, funds the government, and you know, most of the taxes. I mean, government workers pay taxes too,
right?
So the payroll of government goes back, you know, pays taxes, but that whole system, that's the way that runs. And so, what was the stimulus? How did we fund it?
I have no idea.
Sleight of hand, right? More deficit spending. We spent money we didn't have at the federal level. How do you spend money you don't have?
Print more?
Yeah, you print more. And so the stimulus was just kind of a, well, we'll just print money and borrow more. And if we borrow more, how does the government borrow money?
I really have no idea.
It issues treasuries.
Oh,
treasury bonds, right?
Okay.
And bills. And who's buying most of them?
The consumer?
The Federal Reserve.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not winning this trivia challenge.
No, just stay with me here. It's not a trivia thing. It's not a gotcha. Our listeners most of them in the same boat. They're like, well, okay. So
yeah, I mean, I don't
know. The government
doesn't
actually just use the printing press. The government, the Department
of
Treasury,
prints
the bonds that are going to be the borrowing instrument. And then the Federal Reserve buys the bonds. And
so they're basically buying them from themselves.
Well, yeah. The Federal Reserve's technically not part of the government.
Right. Even though people assume it is.
It's not.
It's a separate entity.
It's the Federal Reserve banking system. So the banking system, and where do they get the money from? Their computer. They print it digitally, and they just put it on their balance sheet. So that's how you conjure up money. Well, yeah, and then those obligations are due anywhere from 10 to 30 years from now. Okay. Now, they're at super low rates because that's the current rate environment. It's super cheap.
Right.
So what does that tell you? Well, I mean, ultimately, the government will have to pay it back. And the theory is that one day the economy will be stronger and the government will have better cash flow and it can afford the debt because it's super cheap interest.
Okay? So does it ever really pay it back, or does it
hasn't
take another?
So far, it's like a revolving credit card debt.
Well, I was going to say, does it ever take like another loan to pay off the first loan and it just
kinda
keeps loaning itself?
Well, I mean, the debt service is part of the operating budget of the United States. And effectively, if you're allowing bonds to roll over from much higher interest rates, I mean, think about it. The 30-year bonds that happened in the 70s, they're gone.
It's true.
Okay. So now we're just loading up super cheap debt.
Okay.
Okay. And there's some theorists that that's fine. Hey, you may as well finance it next to nothing. And you can, just like buying a house, you can buy a whole lot of government for next to nothing. But who's going to be paying in 30 years?
Us. Well,
not the current politicians and not most of the current voters.
True.
Okay. So, I mean, a lot of the current voters,
well,
sure,
say,
but not
true,
most baby boomers. Like,
right.
In 30 years, a lot of baby boomers aren't going to be a lot of baby boomers.
Older generations are not going to be paying for it.
So,
if
you think about who's disproportionately benefiting, I mean, the current voting bloc. And so that group is borrowing from the future.
Yeah, they're borrowing
so
from the younger
generation.
So who's paying
for it? All right, our kids are paying for it. Okay, well, what are we doing? And what's everybody concerned about if you print lots of money?
You devalue the money.
Inflation, right? Oh, you're devaluing the money. You're monetizing the debt.
Hey, I got that one right.
Yeah, and we kind of are. And what is Bitcoin?
Cryptocurrency.
Okay, and what does it act like?
Anything it wants to.
Digital gold, baby. Digital gold. Gold is a finite resource. And guess what? Bitcoin, there's only so much of it in existence.
Okay. Yeah, because you have to mine it or something weird.
Correct. And so Bitcoin has a theoretical maximum number of available units, which means it's a scarce item that's trackable. I don't know how it materialized to have value because somebody just believes that it does. And then when enough people are on board with that idea, it becomes real, right? It's like Santa Claus came to town. But Bitcoin goes bananas because if the U.S. currency is going to be cut in half, the purchasing value gets cut in half, well, then the amount of currency it will take to buy Bitcoin should be a lot higher. Hence the rising price of Bitcoin.
So there's a connection back to it.
Waters down the currency, and Bitcoin is suggesting the opposite of what the treasury market is suggesting. Interest rates are super low, which indicates low inflation. Bitcoin is super high, which is a play to combat inflation. So which one is right?
Both?
I don't know. Like, I don't know the answer. I don't know which one is right. But
well,
I mean,
you have two opposites doing the same thing simultaneously, so aren't they kind of both right or half right?
I don't know. I don't think it's going to work that way. Because here's the crazy thing. Right now, Treasury yields are lower than what appears to be inflation in many areas. So 30-year money in Treasury bonds seems to be a lower cost point than if you were to just put your money in your mattress. Well, that's not true. Money in the mattress will lose purchasing power, though.
Money in the savings
faster,
account?
But it's more that the inflation itself, the purchasing power is dwindling faster than the yield on the Treasury.
Right.
That's really what's going on. So you're losing purchasing power
in
the
Treasury.
Yeah, so
you're getting 2%, but if it goes up 3%, then your money is not
as
valuable
still,
in the end.
You'd still be losing purchasing power. And the Federal Reserve has kind of said, we're willing to let inflation run hot for a little while. We're letting it go higher than it needs to. So, look over your shoulder and you'll understand. Yeah, we always have to have somebody in studio being tricky. So, if you think about the scenario I just painted, you more or less have a situation where if you're going to lose money in treasuries, why? Who would buy the treasury?
Does the government end up buying them back
then? The government's the one buying all of them, right? And so the government is printing the money it's using to drive down, to water down the currency.
Isn't
but
it like lending it to itself, though?
Yeah,
like,
here's why inflation's hard to gauge. When you have lots of people out of the workforce, you have demand destruction. Demand destruction lowers price. And people say, well, why are houses getting more expensive? Answer, access to capital, right? If you can get a loan for more money because interest rates are lower, you can throw more money at a house.
Right.
But you can't throw more money at other stuff if you can't get it.
Oh, that's true.
So that's why the market is inflating in some areas but not others. Like oil is dropping. It's gone up recently, but oil's cheaper than it was, say, 10 years ago.
So has the price of cars gone up?
Price of cars has gone up and price of food's going up.
Yeah,
some of that's because of the supply chain problems.
Which has been broken this year.
Yeah, so supply chain problems. But like raw materials for houses, that'll be an interesting one because big forest fires, forced harvest, what happens next? Flood the market with more materials. Does it drive the price of materials down, which helps increase housing demand because you can now build more house because the materials are cheaper? I don't know.
Maybe.
But I do think we're reaching a threshold where if we don't see incomes going up, right? If personal incomes aren't going up and interest rates aren't changing, we're kind of capping out how much people can borrow for houses.
And if the house is worth more than what you can borrow.
Yeah, that's what we call a structural problem. So anyway, Bitcoin is the outlier, right? If you're looking at treasury yields as the canary in the coal mine, they've drifted a little higher, but they still say inflation's not a problem. If you're looking at Bitcoin, then you have to ask yourself, is Bitcoin a legit market or is it a fad where it has, like Tesla, it has so many people interested right now that it's become its own market, it's independent of data, and it's just traders driving things temporarily to bizarre heights. Keep in mind the way bubbles work, right? I have a really famous bubble market for you, but I feel like we should maybe grab a break so that we can talk about it. Let's do that. Cool. Dale caught the clue. One more famous bubble market that I'll share with you. And if you think about when I tell it to you, you're going to be like, are you serious? Because people paid crazy for it and then lost fortunes. Well, we'll find out when we come back. Stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
Yeah, True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where we are home stretching this thing. Right?
We're reminding you that it's always a live show.
It is a live show.
And anything goes.
And in the off moments when we're not live on air, let me tell you, it's still live.
It's still on. All right, so you mentioned a bubble, and I brought up one and you went.
Okay,
no.
Share. So bubble markets are the where prices get radically inflated and then they pop. There's bunches of them. So you can share yours, but I'm going to share a couple, and then I'll share the most famous one that I think was like where you'll hear about it, you'll be like, you're kidding me, right?
So the bubble market that I thought about was Beanie Babies. Like when Beanie Babies came out, they were super popular. People were paying like thousands of dollars for collector Beanie Babies.
Wasn't now, that how eBay got started?
Yeah, and now they're worth like maybe $3. Like they're not even worth what they
I don't know. My kids have Beanie Babies, and they will see like they actually name they rename them, but they remember the original name too.
Right. Yeah.
So but whatever's now on the tag, you're like, oh, it's Sniffles, but I'm gonna call you Chloe. I'm like, what?
Yeah. So, and by the way, I give it up to the toy company because they did rebrand and redo, and they're back in full bore now because that second round of little kids loving on their plush toys is happening again. But you mentioned something different I have never heard of.
Okay, so first I'm going to mention other ones. How about housing in 2006?
That was the one that also came up
to
mind.
That was a bubble,
right?
Pop, boom, how prices declined like crazy. How about the stock market in 2008?
Well, that was a long
arguably, but better would be the NASDAQ in 1999.
Oh, the tech bubble.
Okay, the tech bubble was huge. The NASDAQ fell by close to 80% and took like more than 10 years to recover.
True.
So that was a massive
whack bubble
in value. But the bubble that I think is the most infamous in financial circles was the Dutch tulip bubble of the 1500s.
Okay, now you got to educate us because I have never heard of that.
Okay, so
what is the Dutch tulip bubble?
It's exactly what it sounds like. So Netherlands and that area, tulip bulbs all of a sudden became a craze. And rare tulip bulbs became so valuable that people were literally mortgaging their homes in order to possess tulip bulbs. And
I
ultimately,
can't even imagine doing that.
Well, and I swear you look at it today and you say, it's obvious. The emperor had no clothes. And, you know, people lost fortunes when everything imploded and collapsed. This has been my concern with Tesla. I know I've talked about it many times on this show. And it's so hard for me because, first of all, Tesla as a company, I'm like, I think the cars are cool. I think the concept of what they're working for is cool. I think Elon Musk is an interesting character that's managed to have enough resources and innovation and vision to do extraordinary things.
Right.
Right. I'm not saying that he's an angel or anything, but I'm saying he's really an interesting guy. Like, I mean, I'd spend a day with Elon Musk and just pick his brain and, you know, learn about what he does. And my guess is there are times when it'd be kind of like, I don't know, whatever I want. Because he just has the resources to say, you know what? I think we should put a golf course on the moon. And people are like, well, why would we do that? He's like, let's build a rocket. And you're like, wow, that's what it's like to be with Elon Musk, right?
True.
You know, although it would be smarter than that because he's like, no, I know about physics. Let's build a rocket and we'll do these things. You know, so it's interesting. But anyhow, I digress. The tulip bulb issue was the classic of assigning value to something or creating value because of a frenzy, and it just went crazy and then
popped. Is this the bigger fool theory?
Oh, yeah. And this is also why here's my issue with Tesla. When you look at the size of the company and its forward piece, so I'm going to bring this up to give it context because I haven't looked this up live in a while. So we'll look up there's TSLA.
And by the way, this is not investment advice.
It is not. But Tesla was recently added to the S&P 500. It has currently a market cap of about $7 billion with a B, okay? And this is a company that had total earnings, it looks like, last quarter. Earnings per share, it was 76 per share. It did exceed estimates, but total revenue, $21.4 billion with earnings of negative $976 million.
So you're like, the company's going negative every year. year.
I mean, they have tons of revenue. Last year, that last time they lost a little less, they had revenue of $24.5 billion and earnings of $862 million to the negative, which means they're spending more than they're making. And people say, well, they're growing, so eventually they're going to make money. That is all relatively true in theory, but their forward P.E. ratio right now is 1,224.
It's out of control.
And then you look at General Motors or something, and just for context, let's look up GM's.
Oh, it would be like 30 or something.
It's novel.
It's like 3.
18.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tiny.
And so, and the GM market cap is $58 billion. So GM makes a lot more cars and has a lot broader distribution network than Tesla. So what you're telling me is that Tesla needs to be valued at roughly 10 times more valuable, so 1,000% more valuable than
GM.
And GM made profits in 2019 of $6.7 billion on revenue of $137 billion.
So better revenue
and it had way more revenue and more earnings than Tesla, but it's 10 times less valuable. And I kind of ask people, if GM all of a sudden started manufacturing electric vehicles, does it change your opinion of Tesla? And they're like, well, it's a different business model because they're going to be on demand and this. So you think that if GM has revenues of almost $7 billion, then that's profits, right? So their profits of $7 billion, how much of that could they take and redirect into development of electric vehicles after Tesla's already broken ground and the government's already footed the bill for the expansion of a network of chargers throughout the country?
Right, as long as they played and plugged in the same thing.
The infrastructure is there, so now GM can show up, and if they build cars at 60% of the cost of Tesla, which they have the infrastructure to do,
right,
then what do you say? Right, that's what made the deal with General Motors partnering with Nikola as another alternative fuel truck, right? And I mean, that company's had its whole host of issues. But and here's the really interesting one that may be hurting Tesla right now. Apple has announced their sort of secret Project Titan, which is their electric vehicle, slated for, I think, 2026 or maybe 2024. So Apple wants to bring out an electric vehicle now to compete with Tesla. General Motors and Ford are both in the marketplace. So when you have a Ford PE of 1,200 to General Motors 18, you're 10 times more valuable and you make
money.
And you don't make money. I'm like, it feels like a bubble.
Yeah.
Right? It looks like a bubble. So the bigger fool theory is, well, you just don't see they're going to go into space production or this and that. But if they do, it gets spun off. That's a private holding. It's not part of Tesla.
Yeah, it's not Tesla.
It's associated
with
Elon Musk, who's part of Tesla. And I'm like,
right,
I don't think you can play SpaceX through Tesla. Okay,
yeah.
That's my issue. So I don't know what the solve is, but I will tell you that I think the market just it's a darling right now.
It's a
and
darling?
A darling.
What's that?
Like a market darling. It's just a favorite.
Oh.
It's a pet.
Oh, got it. Okay.
And as a result, people are willing to sort of forgive and let go a lot of the problems because you don't understand. It's the future. And I go, well, if you were valuing it like a car company, and I go, well, what if it's a tech company? Like, it's clearly not only a tech company because they're selling hardware. So it's got to be somewhere in between. And if tech companies have forward multiples of, let's call it 100, it's still 10 times too high or 12 times too high. If it's a car company, it's 18, which means it's actually 60 times too high. If we split the difference somewhere in between and say 30, you still got to cut that price by,
a ton.
80%
yeah.
or something? So it's just clown shoes. I can't make sense of it right now. So to me, it's radioactive, and until then, I can't understand it, which makes it hard to call it an investment. It's just a bunch of speculation.
There you go. You heard it, folks.
And if you want to speculate on it, more power to you, right? So anyway, look, that's the story. The biggie is stimulus today, ho-hum, markets still rotating. The interesting takeaway is also the Russell 2000 has been climbing faster than the rest of the major indexes. That's the small caps. It does indicate, doesn't guarantee, but it indicates that there may be asset rotation in the markets in anticipation of the reopen trade, which gives me some cause for optimism looking into 2021. You want more? Check out our 2021 outlook on YouTube. All right. And how else can they find us, Katie?
They can always give us a call, 541-375-0898, or reach out to us, info@littlejohnfs.com.
All right, gang. That is it for now. And so from my family to yours, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. Until next time, this has been David Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by Littlejohn Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.